Welcome back to Mountain West Connection Podcast. No intro music here. We need to get down to business as we are recapping the title game, and it's bowl season.
It was an interesting one last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, the championship game. For those who don't know, Mountain West Connection, our website, mwcconnection.com, and Aztecs, I wish I had a round of applause here, but they win back-to-back Mountain West titles. There we go. Thank you.
There we go.
27-24. They are victors, and despite apparently people thought we had a Wyoming lean when I posted the Clip It stuff. Well, first off, I couldn't really watch the game until the second half, and Wyoming was a team making big plays in the second half, so that were worth recording.
Apologies if it seemed that way. I was trying to retweet stuff that I was seeing from, like, for instance, the Mountain West Twitter feed and from the San Diego State Twitter feed as I was seeing them. So if I missed some of those, you guys can blame me for that.
Me too, but I put the two big touchdowns for Wyoming. It's like, those are pretty big plays, and I stand by my statement, learn how to tackle C.J. Johnson, because there's about four Aztecs who couldn't catch up to him, or at least to me, seemed within range to make a tackle on that long touchdown pass in the second half. But whatevs. Aztecs won. They played well. Running game rebounded quite mightily compared to the last time these two teams played. And this is a game. I know there's other good games going on. Penn State made their comeback. Clemson, Virginia Tech was pretty close. But this was a same excitement level for the most part, I think.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it wasn't like the prettiest looking game. You know, both of these teams had three turnovers. And, you know, the way that those turnovers came about made it a lot more dramatic than I think, you know, many of us expected it to be, myself included at some point. Like, there was an instance where it was, you know, 17-10 or, you know, 24-10, you know, late in the third quarter. And we were thinking, you know,
Me too.
San Diego's got this one in the bag. And then the fourth quarter got a little weird, and Wyoming almost came all the way back. And that's a credit for them, to both teams, actually, for, you know, mostly taking advantage of the opportunities that were given to them. It was kind of a weird game in some respects, kind of sloppy on both sides, a lot of careless mistakes, a lot of penalties, which especially figured early when it seemed like neither team was able to get much offensive momentum. Not the prettiest game, but still, all in all, pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it was. I was with you as well. 24-10, I'm like, this game's over. But then Wyoming goes on their longest drive of the game for an eight-play drive. That was that Tanner Gentry pass in the end zone where people were saying, push off, pass interference. However, if you remember the Richard Sherman thing a couple weeks ago, we blasted a wide receiver. Kind of the same thing. When you're outside the pocket, there can be some contact before the ball's thrown. So
I watched it roughly 17 times first time live, and to me it seemed more like he was using the coverage guy's momentum against him. It didn't seem like there was that much of a push off.
Me neither. Like, when he first saw it, it was hard to tell because the play wasn't zoomed in, but you see before they cut to the side, there was a little Aztecs defender had a little hand in there as well, and it more looked like he was putting his, like, you're right, kind of momentum, or putting his hand back there. He may have touched him, but more along the lines in case he falls into him or something like that. Then the ball came to him. But regardless, it was negligible. That was a great play by Josh Allen to get it down there and find the end zone. And then there, it's like, well, the game's back. And then decided to go back and forth and back and forth.
That was essentially the same play that they used to tie it against UNLV a few weeks back.
That's right. Back in the end zone. Long pass.
Yeah. And, I mean, what's really interesting is I noticed as the game went along, you know, when it came to Wyoming clawing their way back into this game, the way that they did it was more or less to try to pick on everybody that wasn't DeMonte Casey. And, you know, with good reason. You know, Casey ended up being the defensive player of the game with two interceptions. And, you know, in the first half especially, like, you know, Casey made one really good athletic play on the first interception, and then just took advantage of a really ill-advised throw that Allen made across his body, across the field, no matter. I mean, it was the kind of throw that I used to make in NCAA 14 and stuff like that.
But crush it, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. But it seemed like in the second half especially, they were trying to attack pretty much everybody else in the secondary. And, you know, Allen's box score, you know, he was under 50%, but you know, he had about 250 yards, three touchdowns on the whole. And he took a lot of punishment trying to push the ball down the field. And I think when you look at the results, like, that was how Tanner Gentry ended up getting more involved in the game plan down the stretch, because he only had one catch, I think, for like 14 yards in the first half.
But only two in the second. That's it.
Yeah. But they were two really big catches.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and, you know, Jake Mollhart had a couple of nice long catches as well. And then, of course, like you mentioned, the, you know, long touchdown to C.J. Johnson as well. So you could kind of see what Wyoming was trying to do. Like, they weren't really doing it at first, but I think that when they realized Brian Hill was going to have some real tough sledding, because, you know, he did have 93 yards, but, of course, there was the one big 66-yard run that he had, that they weren't able to capitalize, if I remember correctly. Like, they didn't actually score on that drive, did they?
I'll check. I don't think so. I just remember he went far, and then I was thinking, okay, he's going to break out or after cut that screen pass, because he had 17 receiving yards, two catches. I'll see where that is, but I thought after the screen play when they're deep in their end zone. But that was, yeah, right, second. That was a second-half run. I'll see if I can find it here, but...
But they this made was a, more yeah. of a concerted effort to try to push the ball down the field. It was one of those high-risk, high-rewards kinds of things. And it almost worked, you know, because on the one hand, San Diego State ended up tallying four sacks, you know, because, you know, Josh Allen was seemingly under pressure pretty much every snap.
Yeah. And really quick, that play was the missed field goal, the 42-yard missed field goal.
That's what I was thinking of. So, I mean, he took a lot of punishment trying to get the ball down the field, but that was the element of the game that they had that, you know, if we're being honest, that was kind of missing from the San Diego State game plan, because Christian Chapman took a couple shots down the field on the first play, or on the first drive, rather. And Wyoming played some pretty nice defense, but, you know, beyond Michael Holder's 30-yard catch, I believe it was in the second quarter or the early third quarter, you know, that was the only play they had that was longer than, I think, 15 yards.
Well, they didn't need to. With Penny going for 117, Pumphrey over 100, they basically nearly, I think they overdoubled, because last game, I think they combined for about 160. They essentially almost doubled that, 227 between the two, three touchdowns, and about 6 yards of carry.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, to me, it was familiar, and I tweeted about it, that it was the same kind of game plan that they had against both, you know, UNLV and Fresno State. It was just kind of like putting the opposing defense into a sleeper hold and kind of choking the life out of them. And when you consider that, I think they were just effective enough on third down just to keep drives alive. You know, they were only...
Was not at all. Jeez.
Yeah. And, you know, they held the ball just enough down the stretch where they ended up having a time of possession advantage of about, you know, 34 minutes to 26 minutes. And those kinds of things made the difference, because, you know, they weren't flashy, really, but they got the job done, especially, you know, someone like Rashard Penny, who I think not only running the football, but in the couple of opportunities that he had returning kicks, like, he made both of those count. Like, he had, you know, the 175-yard one that they turned that one into points, right?
That was the one, I believe, is after a touchdown. Like, when Wyoming, every time Wyoming got close, Aztec either got a field goal or did something to respond or hold. But I believe, I know that was the second half. I think it was.
That might have been the fumble that he had, or that Danelle Pumphrey had.
No, I'm not sure.
But I mean, regardless, like, you know, they didn't have that many opportunities on special teams, but when they did, they made them count. And that was one of the really subtle things that I noticed in this game, is that, you know, first of all, we should probably give a shout out to both of the punters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially that 75-yard punt that Tanner Blaine had. Did you happen to see that?
I did see that. Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, maybe some of it was the elevation, but I mean, still, good Lord.
Yeah, it was a fumble by Juwan Washington, sorry.
Oh,
Wyoming scored, made it 27-24. Late in the game, it has a huge play where the return got them basically in field goal range, but then they fumbled it, and that's where the back and forth went. Where how many times could San Diego State maybe give up this game?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the one really subtle thing I noticed in this game, is there were certain times where San Diego State was able to tilt field position in their favor. Yeah, because if you look at the average starting position, Wyoming on average started at their own 28. You know, they had the couple of early drives that they were able to turn, you know, short fields into 10 points. But, you know, San Diego State on this drive chart had 17 drives and they started on average from their own 47-yard line.
Well, that's a big difference. You gotta, it's a big deal.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you don't want to totally dismiss the fact that Wyoming, even despite that advantage, really kind of hung tough, especially on defense. Because, yeah, while, you know, Pumphrey and Penny got their yards, you know, the defense really made them work for it, too. Like, they did end up having, you know, 7 tackles for loss. And it was Johanna Gaifan who ended up having a really big game for them on the defensive side of the ball. Because he had, you know, 8 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, and 2 sacks.
Well, think of this too. You have to a pair of sacks, and they drop back 13 times a throw.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was making an impact on the limited opportunities that he had. And, I mean,
well, they had to. Without Granderson, DJ May, Appleby has been out. When those guys have been out for a while, somebody had to step up, and he had a good game.
Yeah. And, I mean, on the flip side, too, was they were really struggling, I think, with the San Diego State front four, or their front six, rather, the 3-3 stack that they have there. Mm-hmm. Calvin Munson especially, like, his box score doesn't really tell you the whole story of how much he impacted the game, I don't think. Because, you know, he's only credited with 9 tackles and 1 sack, but it seemed like he was pretty much everywhere.
He was, yeah. A hand to nearly every player. Having somebody go a different direction, coming to start to get close or finish something. He's in the neighborhood of probably double or triple that amount of plays that he got credited for.
Definitely. And I mean, this was kind of like, you know, the stars really kind of stepped up because Kyle Kelly had 2 sacks. Of course, Casey had the 2 interceptions. You know, Sergio Phillips in the middle of that defense came up with a sack and a pass breakup. You know, Malik Smith had a very nice defense that would have been, I believe, a really big first down or a touchdown. I'm trying to remember which play that was. No, that was the play that got overturned, right?
I believe so.
Because there was the instant replay later in the game where if it had been a catch and a fumble, it would have been a San Diego State football.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember I had to get my mute part of it because I was working as well. I just remember some sort of long replay, and I believe that was it. Yeah.
But that was Malik Smith who defended on that, and he, you know, good effort on his part, definitely. So, I mean.
So late in the game, I'll ask you this. Well, finish your thought real quick. They'll move on to something else.
No,
that
I was
discussed.
Just going to say that, you know, they just kind of rebounded in a big way. Like, they struggled in the last couple of weeks, but, you know, the guys who lead this team, this defense in particular, they were the ones that had the big games and came up with plays when they needed it most.
Here's a couple plays that were, like, I kind of joked, like, Josh Allen tries to do a lot, and he does a lot and does it well also, mm-hmm. but he tried to, it just late in the game where, like I said, Aztecs fumbled twice, to allow Wyoming to have a couple more chances. And we'll get to the final drive there. But, like, the one... Let me see which one it was here. Where do they fumble? Well, I guess it's technically on downs, but he fumbled. Where it was a... was it the final drive or the one before? Shoot, I can't... Where is that? He had the one where it was 4th and 7. Mm-hmm. I think they got the field goal. Oh, yeah, here it is. Yeah, sorry. It's a little bit before that. 24-17. It is 3rd and 9. Sorry, not the 4th down play. And there's 2 plays I want to talk about, but Josh Allen, we know he can run, he'll move. He basically drops his head, takes on 2 defender Wyoming or San Diego State defenders, nearly gets the yard, but he tries to do whatever he does, drop ahead and get that extra yard. Not that it would cost him much, but it did lead to a field goal. But that was a big play, I thought, where he tried to do a bit too much, where he was close to first down, but they're deep in their own territory, so holding to a field goal is actually kind of a plus there. But then they actually rebounded and got that two play touchdown. But then you had the play, as you and me were chatting. Was the keeper 4th and 2 play? Was that correct?
It was a quarterback draw, although it looked like it was a kind of an option type of play.
You know, it looked like to me it could have been a toss because it looked like Hill was ready for the ball, like getting there for a toss. Like it seemed like it's one of those where technically a read option, but not where a traditional handoff or you wait to go to the defensive end. This seemed like Allen could have taken a step forward and pitch it or go. And the way he moved to the side, there's just enough. I felt, I watched it a bunch of times, I felt there's enough room for him to pitch it to Hill and only have one guy on the outside, and Hill probably could have beat that guy, I'm thinking. But he goes to the middle and just gets swarmed. It's hard to tell in that instance, but I felt the pitch would have been the better play there. Assuming that's what I thought the call looked like, either pitch it or go up the middle.
Yeah, I mean, even in the couple of replays that I was able to see, it just seemed like the Aztecs had that red on defense almost immediately because, you know, he barely got back to the line of scrimmage before someone on that front line was there to meet him, basically.
Maybe they knew it was a fake or something. They knew it was going to be kind of fake you out for the draw. You know what I mean? Like where you're going to, it's instead of a delay draw where you hold back and then go, they knew they hit, the way it was set up, maybe they figured Allen's going to keep it no matter what. But yeah, I felt there's room, but it's hard to question that last little play. But I just thought there, if that was indeed the play call, which I think it was, I thought giving it to Hill would have been better for a one-on-one on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, the split decision to keep it for himself.
Exactly.
You know, for as tough of a runner as he is, I don't necessarily have a problem with the play call. I think that the defense just stepped up and made a really big play on that one.
Oh, I do too. I just, if they'd option, I'm like, maybe. And then, what's up with the play before that? Why did it, why didn't he just kick the field goal? Where was that? There's a couple plays before. Wasn't there one where they're deep and there they decided to go for it and they fumbled it?
I'm trying to remember. I think, well, no,
there's one of those. They're deep in the territory. Yeah, it's that one where, it's basically the drive before the final one where they got 4th and 20 and there's a sack. They're sitting at the, what yard line? The 15. I get you driving down the field, but you kick a field goal, they have to have a touchdown. I'm like, why aren't you kicking? That seemed kind of like an odd play call to go for it on fourth and four. Whatever it was, but it was weird.
I mean, I think that when you consider they were finally getting some offensive traction at that point in the game, you know, you're playing to win, and so I don't necessarily have a problem with it.
Yeah, I just thought it was odd. I'm like, I get their point, but it's like they've been look at the two touchdown drives before. They went downfield quickly and scored when they're in a couple of possessions earlier. So, but there's always you can nitpick at small stuff. Like, let me ask you this: early in the game, in that KZ touchdown. Or not KZ touchdown, touchback. Mm-hmm. What do you like? I saw a lot of people complaining about it. Not in this game, but the NFL. How would you change the rule? Because everybody says it's completely unfair. Because that could have changed the game as well. Had he scored the touchdown on the pick six instead of fumbling out of the end zone.
I mean, it's hard to say because you know
you lost the ball.
When you make that attempt to try to stretch toward the goal line, what you're doing is kind of you're putting the football at risk. Like if he had kept it to himself. And Allen had pushed him out of bounds, they probably would have ended up at the, you know, 2 or 3 yard line. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, someone like Penny or Pumphrey could have punched it in from there. I don't know that there is a fix for something like that. Because when you're stretching the ball out, like, you know, away from your body, unless you have a lot of hand strength or something like that, you're running the risk of, you know, basically having someone come and jar it away before it gets there. I don't necessarily think that it's actually a problem that needs a solution.
I'm just wondering because I'm trying to think about it. I'm like both sides, like, okay, but you lost the ball, but then people are like, well, you reward the other team for sometimes doing nothing. But then again, you could fumble the ball into safety. You know what I mean? The other end of the end zone. If you're back there and, or look at, well, that's a different play, but the Dan Orlovsky out of the end zone for the Lions years ago. But it's same thing on offense. If you happen to lose the ball without any, like, with nobody around, you could still lose the ball. Like, say it's a bad snap, or the quarterback just trips and falls in the end zone, or, you know what I mean? Like, something, the defense, the other opposing team doesn't do anything. It still goes the other way. It's a safety. So it's like, I try to think, like, what would be fair? But again, it all comes back to, like you said, you make a risk and you lose the ball. You don't get rewarded for losing the ball. But I get if it went out of bounds at the 1 yard line, you get it there.
Yeah. So I mean, it's like, it's as simple as just finish the play.
Yeah, basically. That too.
And if you take a chance and it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. I mean, it's almost analogous to like the Boise State fans have been reading about recently, where it's like, mm-hmm. Well, you win the games on your schedule.
Yeah.
You know, oh, Boise State should be in the conference championship game. Well, you know, maybe you should have beaten Wyoming.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. You know what I mean?
It's like, what would you give them the ball at the 1 yard line on the team? Because if that rule were in place, say it goes out of the end zone and somehow your team keeps it, there could be a lot of shenanigans of, oh, I fumbled and tripped out of the end zone when a guy was near me or something. You know what I mean? There could be weird stuff like that.
I don't think it was the kind of play that Rocky Long would have been too mad about, because it's the defensive player of the year, you know, with a big interception, you know, a really big momentum changer early in the game, and he's just trying to get his team on the board.
Yeah.
Really nothing to argue about.
No, I was curious your thoughts, because I see a lot of people complain because NFL, but I'm like, I think the rule's fine. I don't see, unless you give me a compelling reason to change it or an alternative, I can't think of one. So the game's in the books. Anything else we need to add about the title game that we really need to dive into more?
Yeah, I mean,
what else you got?
But I don't want to say that Boise State fans have sour grapes, but, you know, some vocal components of it do. And, you know, if you didn't watch the game last night, I think you just kind of missed out. You know, it was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. It was kind of weird. It was, you know.
You know, it's weird. Freaking Steve Levy and whoever in the booth wearing stupid cowboy hats and bolo ties. Come on.
Brian Greasy, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, Brian Greasy, yeah. And then you got Todd McShane on the sideline doing whatever he's doing.
Yeah, you know, Justified called and they want their wardrobe back.
No, no, excuse me. Justified has better wardrobe than that. Come on.
I'm just joking.
No, I need to defend that. That show was great and amazing. So they didn't wear him, Timothy Oliphant or Walton Goggins did not wear that garbage in
That's
the show.
True.
One thing I do want to mention, like before the game, because McShay's like he's a draft dude. He's talking about, what do you think of this comparison? Josh Allen to like Joe Flacco. That's what he kind of mentioned heading into this game, doing his research.
I feel like Josh Allen is a little more of a playmaker with his legs than Joe Flacco is, don't you think?
Is he elite?
He hasn't won a conference championship yet, so I don't know.
I think he's more athletic. Like, he makes a big play. Like, look at the Casey play. He went after, just bulldozed him to try to get him out of bounds.
Okay, so I'm thinking about that. Let me throw this comparison out there and let me see what you think. Logan Thomas.
But I could see that, because isn't he technically a tight end in the NFL right now with some team who picked him up recently?
Oh, I thought he was still a quarterback, but maybe. But I mean, you know.
Maybe somebody else would think it up, but he's a big guy. There's a former QB that picked up to be a tight end on some practice squad in the NFL.
Yeah, well, it's in the way that he's got some, like, raw tools that, you know, some team might take, like, a day three flyer on him when he does come out for the draft, whether it's this year or next year or something like that.
He's also mobile enough because he moves around.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I feel like he's a big, mobile, strong-armed quarterback in the likes of like something like somebody like Logan Thomas.
It's a good comparison. I'm trying to think of a current starter. I wouldn't say like Kaepernick, because he can throw better than Kaepernick, I think. But kind of a – you can see his style a little bit comparative. Now, he won't – Kaepernick wants to obviously maybe run more than Allen would, just because – but that's somewhat. But I think Logan Thomas is a pretty good one.
All right. I mean, that's all I had for the game.
All right, so we get to bowl stuff?
Let's do it.
Or actually, hold on. I saw a tweet about, is Pat Hill actually interviewing today? Is that correct?
I mean, I haven't heard anything personally, but I kind of hope that he is.
Seeing who this
guy, you know, because, one, we're always looking for the page clicks out there. But, I mean, as a Fresno State fan especially, like, it would be delightful if you had that kind of dichotomy of, you know, Fresno State versus Fresno State, in a manner of speaking.
Exactly.
So obviously we'll keep you updated out there as to when the Spartans do hire a new head coach. But that's something to keep an eye on, especially.
I just happened to see that you tweeted out earlier today. So let's get to bowl stuff. So we knew late last night during the game, some glorious news came raining down from the Houston Chronicle and ESPN. Mm-hmm. University of Houston is going to the Las Vegas Bowl. Thank you.
That's a very big step in the right direction.
And I can guarantee ESPN made this happen, because this game's on ABC, one of the first bowl games. I doubt they'd want to see San Diego State North Texas matchup.
Shout out to the Pac-12, by the way, for being just bad enough this year to allow this to happen.
Sure, because this is actually better than playing whoever would have been 6 and, like, say Cal got to bowl eligible, it would have been Cal or something, maybe. Which,
like,
Cal can be exciting, but still, 6-16, come on.
Yeah.
So get to see Greg Ward Jr. That'd be nice.
Greg Ward Jr., yeah, and Ed Oliver. You know, they're, you know, the guys in the backfield are definitely going to have to contend with him in the middle of that Houston defense. That, you know, once I read about that, that made the Vegas Bowl a lot more interesting to me. Like, I feel like we'll go through all the bowl games, obviously, but I feel like that's probably the best one automatically now, don't you?
Oh, for sure, because Boise's playing Baylor, which is interesting. Could be a lot of points, but this is I don't think this is just one of the best games in Mountain West, which I think it is. I haven't looked at the bowl slate closely, so maybe I'm just speaking too quickly, but outside of the playoff games, this is could be one of the more intriguing matchups out of any bowl game.
I definitely agree. Contrast the styles at a minimum, because you get for San Diego State's defense coming back with a vengeance in the championship game versus Houston's offense. It's been, you know, a little erratic this year, but you know, this
well, even Houston's defense has been pretty good at times.
Yeah, and so it's going to be really interesting to see these kind of strength on strength matchups in this one. And of course, we'll talk about it a little bit more as the game gets a little bit closer. But that's just kind of my initial sense of it.
Dang, I was hoping for an early line already out for that game, but it's not out yet. Just to see what it was really quick.
I looked for that earlier in preparation for this show, so yeah.
Not yet. Okay, next, let's just stay at that same day. You got UTSA, New Mexico. Yeah, that could be interesting, maybe.
Well, yeah, maybe. UTSA is a team on the rise in Conference USA. I believe it's Frank Wilson's first year in San Antonio.
I was going to still see if Larry Coker was there. I forgot.
No, they hired Frank Wilson away from LSU.
That's right. Okay.
You know, 6-6 in the Conference USA West is not bad, considering where they were. You know, they struggled in the last couple of years, but they, you know, found just enough wins on the schedule to put it together.
Yeah, they did play CSU, lost 23-14 earlier in their week two.
Yeah. I think they were still struggling with some quarterback issues at that point. But I think it's an interesting matchup for New Mexico because, you know, obviously, their running game has kind of reached an entirely new level in the last month. And I wonder if there's any kind of, you know, change in the, you know, the layoff that they have between the last regular season game and the bowl game as to whether UTSA can come up with a plan to stop that running game. Because if you'll recall, you know, even after championship week, I'm pretty sure it's still number one in the country with regards to yards per play on the ground.
I wouldn't surprise me to look that up. But UTSA, they also can move the ball a little bit. They usually give some teams, they're most known for, I guess, the past couple of years, besides Larry Coker, but giving some teams like Arizona State some scares. But they seem to come up short more often than not on those. But as for rushing offense, they are number one in yards per game. Attempt, they are number one. And I think they're also number two in touchdowns.
That sounds about right.
Just Navy's the only team that beats him who has an absurd 54 touchdowns. Yeah, New Mexico has more rushing yards than... Oh, Navy has one more game to play, but unless Navy rushes for 400-plus yards, which is possible, it's 43-31 New Mexico, 39-30 for Navy. So it'll take a lot for Navy to get total yards, but it's also one more game. These numbers are 12 games each right here, so
yeah,
give the edge to Lobos. All right, what's... I don't have the exact schedule. What's up? Do you have the next game in front of you? Just briefly
I don't have
touch?
Any particular order, but since you mentioned it, we can talk about the Cactus Bowl next. Boise State and Baylor.
Baylor finished, 6-6? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think someone tweeted out earlier that they started 6-0 and finished 6-6.
They did. were top 12, I want to say, at one point.
Yeah, Boise's catching them at a good time, I think. And I can't speak for anybody else, but I kind of hope they beat them by like 50.
I think they will, partly because Jim Grobel officially said recently he's not coming back for another year. We figured he'd be a placeholder, but who knew if it'd be like 1 or 2 years. But I think it's possible, but losing 6 in a row, playing for coach who isn't going to be there, and if you don't like the extracurricular stuff, which most people or everyone should be not too happy with what's been going on there or what's been reported the past little while, beat them 60-2. I'll give them 2 points.
I won't even give them that. But see, but on the flip side now, because we've talked about it briefly in past podcasts and we've had a couple of articles up about it on the website at this point, is Brian Harsin going to be the coach by the time they hit the Cactus Bowl?
He is at least one of two that has interviewed, and apparently people do not like. Let me ask you this: if you're one of two people for something particular, would that be considered high interest?
Yes.
So yeah, people do not appreciate me saying Oregon had high interest in Brian Harsin.
Well, I mean, if you're one of two people being interviewed, I would say that there is a very strong interest. That's just cold hard math.
I know. Just logistically, it's like yeah. But it looks like it's him and Willie Taggart, South Florida. So I don't know. It's you'd assume they want it sooner than later. The dead period starts soon. I think it's December 12th, I want to say, for recruiting. So here's the thing. He's not playing in the big money bowl game, so if he's going to take a job, he's going to go right away. Had Boise State been in the Cotton Bowl, he would have pulled maybe like what Urban Meyer did at Utah a decade ago, do double duty, stuff like that. Or I think, no, because Tommy Tuberville, he had left before the Sugar Bowl, right, with Cincinnati, I believe? Or Brian Kelly, I mean, I should say. Brian Kelly.
I honestly don't remember, but that's
I think, fun. But yeah, but usually they leave. But if it's going to be taken for, if he's going to be offered that job, they're going to want him sooner than later, and he's going to be gone. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming, so not to say this could happen, but if the offer comes before dead period, which is a week away, he's going to be gone to get whatever recruiting he can in the next couple of days, because I assume they want to coach next week pretty soon, and so you have that. That could be a thing in the air. And then Baylor, they're looking at a Western Kentucky's head coach. So maybe there'll be two new head coaches in this game.
Well, I don't think that they would probably do anything more than have an interim in this game and then hit the ground running after the game.
Depends who stays, though. But if he wants to bring an OC, DC, QB coach, it's going to have to be an interim. But I'm just saying, I just mean two new coaches coming in. May not coach the game, obviously, but be there. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying, yeah. But it looks like, real quick, Baylor, Jeff Brohm, and then also Sonny Dykes of Cal is supposed to interview for that job as well.
Interesting.
So, and Art Briles, sorry. Or no, that's Houston job, never mind. I'm thinking something else. Oh, yeah, we should mention Houston. We'll see at Tom Herman if he's going to coach that game or not.
I thought Herman already left.
Oh, what am I thinking? Jeez, I'm...
it's Sunday. That's here.
Todd Orlando is the interim head coach who... former Utah State DC. Sorry, I'm looking at coaching search and scrolling down, and I saw his name pop up. I'm like, wait a minute. Did we not mention that? Sorry. I apologize. A million different things happening with bowl stuff. So no. Todd Orlando, so that's something we probably should have mentioned for the miniature bowl preview. So you can if you made it this far, thank you. You can fast forward or whatever you want to do the past 30 seconds and remove it from your life. But it happens. It happens, right? A lot of we could have four coaching changes within the conference. So there's a lot of stuff that could happen.
All right, do we want to move on?
Let's move on. What do you want to do next? You want to do the Air Force South Alabama amazing tilt?
The Arizona Bowl in Tucson.
Arizona. Mm-hmm.
Some Air Force fans not totally happy with the arrangement.
That was one of our questions we received about that.
And I think I can sympathize because I was trying to remember what bowl did Air Force go to last year? I'll look that up real quick.
Not the Potato Bowl. They went to, was it the one in Florida? Poinsettia, right?
Was it the point? No. Okay, so last year they were in the Armed Forces Bowl.
Oh, yeah, that matchup that goes back and forth within the conference.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm looking at kind of what Air Force has done in the last few years as far as, you know, their bowl arrangements. So, 2014, they win 10 games and they end up in the Potato Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last year they lose in the conference title game and they end up in the Armed Forces Bowl. And then this year they end up in the Arizona Bowl.
Well, last year, here's the thing about last year, BYU kind of messed up things last year because they took one of the Mountain West spots going to Vegas.
Yeah.
So that kind of skews where Air Force went last year because of that.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's what I was going to say. You know, the Armed Forces Bowl isn't one of the primary arrangements the Mountain West has. It's one of those secondary ones that comes into play when, you know, machinations happen, backroom dealings, or
whatever. That's how the Cactus Bowl came into play this year.
Yeah, so I mean, that's how they ended up with the, you know, really interesting matchup last year with Cal. So, you know, while I sympathize with getting stuck with, you know, a game against the Sunbelt team, on the whole, I think if you look at the last 3 years, I feel kind of like it evens out because, you know, they got a spot with the top 20 team last year, you know, and I think that was even without, Weston Steelhammer for that one, or at least I think he got called for targeting early in that one.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, 2 years ago, if you remember, they actually played Western Michigan and beat them pretty handily. So I feel like, you know, the Armed Forces Bowl was a pretty nice setup for them. And while the Arizona Bowl may not be quite as nice or quite as highly regarded in the hierarchy,
it's not. It's the final pick.
you know, I mean, it's still an opportunity for one to see the team clinch another 10-win season, mm-hmm. which I think you can't underestimate. And, you know, I mean, I think in the long run, it'll probably all even out. Like, you said you were going to have the bowl priorities.
I believe I have it right here.
Like, where's
the Arizona Bowl's last. Because here's how it goes. It goes, Las Vegas Bowl gets first. I don't have it directly in front of me, but I'm 90% sure this is correct. Vegas Bowl, and it goes by pick, not record. They changed that a couple years ago. So Vegas Bowl gets first pick. They choose champ. Poinsettia Bowl gets pick two. However, this year, somehow the Cactus Bowl finagles its way to pick two because the Pac-12 does not have enough bowl eligible teams. So Cactus Bowl shoots up to two. They like Boise because they traveled to Arizona well from prior games. We'll see if that still stands. So Cactus Bowl was two. Poinsettia Bowl is three. They're going to take... So here's what it came down to. Did the Poinsettia Bowl want Wyoming or did they want Air Force? That's what it came down to because then you have or I guess maybe CSU because then it goes to the Potato Bowl and there's probably a deal in place because Hawaii has to take the Hawaii eligible team. New Mexico desperately wanted the home team, so they're going to pick the Lobos. They'll make a deal. It's like, all right, we'll pick the Lobos or don't pick the Lobos or whatever. And so... Well, there's an order. There's also some finagling going on to make moves. So, but Poinsettia Bowl was three, Potatoes four, and honestly, the Rams are a good team. I think the Rams are playing the best of any team right now in the conference. So that's the next pick, and then it goes New Mexico Bowl. If Hawaii's eligible, they are there no matter what. But it's the fifth selection. Arizona Bowl is last selection. So it came down to, I guess, technically three bowls: the Poinsettia, the Potato Bowl, and then Arizona Bowl. So probably decided first Poinsettia. You got Wyoming or Air Force, we pick Wyoming, and then for whatever reason, maybe distance, but they're both the same team. CSU Air Force, not much difference. Who are they going to take for the Potato Bowl? And they chose CSU over Air Force, and maybe it's because they are playing much better football at the moment. Air Force is playing well, obviously, but Rams have been playing really good, I think, lately. And so I guess, because remember too, it's ticket sales, it's who's going to watch on TV. There's more than just how good your team is. That obviously helps, but travel.
Some of it.
Ticket commitment.
Yeah, I mean, some of it I was just going to say is that, you know, some of it may also come down to the fact that Air Force was
that
just
too.
In the Potato Bowl 2 years ago.
And I believe the Rams have never been there, correct?
I don't know.
Not for a long time. Did Utah State last year? Boise State's played there. Okay, so maybe that's why. Let's get a new team that's never been there.
Yeah, so I mean, I have a feeling like if this exact situation played out next year, you know, the Poinsettia Bowl, I would guess, is probably in a, they probably felt pretty good getting to choose between Wyoming and Air Force. And I don't think it was necessarily a slight towards Air Force as much as it was a reward pick for Wyoming for being kind of the surprise team in the conference this year. And it may be that in this particular instance, kind of the opposite of last year, you know, Air Force didn't, you know, they may have benefited from circumstances last year when they got to play Cal, and they may have been victimized by those same circumstances this year, getting stuck playing South
Alabama. There could be that. I mean, also the Poinsettia Bowl could be choosy because they know BYU is going to fill up that stadium like last time they were there. They'll bring lots of fans, or there's fans on the West Coast, so they probably check, all right, who's the best matchup or the best game, and I guess more people, if you're going to sit down and watch a football game, odds are most people do not want to watch a triple option game or something. And so there's always that too. But yeah, they play South Alabama. We know the Jaguars beat Mississippi State this year. They beat San Diego State this year. It's a team. Air Force probably should roll over, but they've played enough good opponents, South Alabama, and they won their last game to get to bowl eligible to be 6-6. So and also, one thing, too, it's on Campus Insiders. I don't know if it'll be on Twitter stream, but it's going to be on American Sports Network. And then there's also a deal to get on Altitude, which will help a lot of the people in the Colorado area in that part of the country to watch that game as well, more traditionally. All right, so let's go to the Colorado State, Idaho, the famous Idaho Potato Bowl with the chives. Chives are underrated, I'm going to say. They're very underrated topping.
And they get to play Idaho.
Yeah, soon to be FCS Idaho. Sorry, had to say it.
Soon to be FCS.
I'm just saying, people like that. Rams fans. Like, what are you... whatever. Idaho, what was their record even this year? I don't even know. Were they 7-5? In the 8-4 in the Sun Belt. Whew.
They were 8-4.
All right.
They surprised a few folks this year, and I think, you know, Bill Connolly, if I remember correctly from his preseason previews, he was one of the more prominent voices who said that this could be the year that Idaho challenges for a bowl spot. And, you know, while they might have been kind of a tier below the big three in that conference,
plus,
you know,
Detroit Arkansas and State, App State, they've won six of seven games too.
Yeah, so, you know, and they may have outperformed their, you know, numbers a little bit, because, you know, if you look at their total offense, they were kind of middle of the road in the conference, and on total defense, they were, you know, slightly below average. But, you know, they
including
teams who were in front of them on the schedule,
including UNLV.
So this is kind of like their including UNLV. Yes, let's not forget that. But, you know, they played well, especially down the stretch on defense. Like, they had pretty nice wins. They won, you know, 2 of 3 on the road late in, you know, October, early November. And this is kind of their reward for.
And the defense is pretty good. They forced 6 turnovers versus Georgia State. Gave up fewer than 20 points in 3 of their final 4 games. Even they gave up 31 to South Alabama. But you said, right, defense has been playing pretty well for the last quarter of the season. Oh yeah, Izzy
they
Matthews.
Might have a hard time with this running
game. Who else
is back?
Now? Dalen Dawkins, and then the who's a freshman McKinley, Marvin. Yeah, him. So it'll be interesting to see. So let's go next game. We got Hawaii versus Middle Tennessee State. Good old Christmas Eve matchup. Why is that?
I'm quietly very excited for this game because I feel that's the kind of game that could be like 50.
It might actually go
52.
To Christmas Day on the East Coast, you're saying? With that 8 Eastern kickoff time?
It might. I mean, if you look at what Middle Tennessee has done on offense, they're one of the more efficient teams in the country. You know, obviously we didn't get to see a lot of Hawaii on national television this year, but, you know, yards per play on total offense, Middle Tennessee is 10th. So while the Warriors may have a little bit of trouble keeping up, you know, this is a team, you know, Hawaii team that has found a lot of big passing plays especially, and so it's going to be fun to see kind of how that shakes out. Like, you know, if Drew Brown and Brent Stock still throw for, like, you know, 300 yards apiece with 4 touchdowns apiece, I certainly
would. I would love to be somewhere in the Middle Tennessee State football team the past 2 years, because do you know where they went bowling last year? No, that was Memphis.
Weren't they at the Miami Beach Bowl with BYU?
The Bahamas Bowl. They go to Bahamas and now Hawaii.
Yeah. Okay. What did I think of? Whoever.
Yeah, hook them up with something awesome. So it's pretty cool to go to play both those locales. So two excellent tropical islands to go to. But that could be an interesting matchup, because even wasn't there talk of. I don't know, the Conference USA, but Western Kentucky, I think, was in the mix as well. And that could have been an equally a good matchup, I think, offensively as well.
Yeah, and both these teams, by the way, top.
Let the ball fly, folks. Let it fly.
30-yard pass plays through the air. So be on the lookout for that. Santa Slay's not going to be like.
All right, so that's the game. What would you? Let's do a quick ranking. What would you say the number one bowl is? Okay, Vegas Bowl. We'll probably do an article on this later, but Vegas Bowl number one.
Bowl.
What would you say is number two?
Honestly, if I'm trying to think. This is
two
where options. It gets tough, because I feel like there's three options in my mind. The Poinsettia Bowl should be a good one. The Cactus Bowl should be a good one. But honestly, I'm like,
okay, I would go Wyoming,
BYU.
So I'd
put the Hawaii Bowl number two.
Two. I guess it's split in hairs a little bit, because I want to see that running attack, Brian Hill versus Jamal Williams. That should be pretty exciting. No,
can
you cannot.
The Poinsettia Bowl and the Cactus Bowl is 3A and 3B.
So we got Vegas, then you got Hawaii / Poinsettia. I would go next with Boise. Number three for me would be Boise Baylor. And then you would stick Wyoming BYU below that.
That's fair. I would put, like I said, okay. I'd put Wyoming.
And I guess BYU, I'll just State, Baylor, well, kind of Idaho, CSU ball. Next, and then the Air Force, but the Arizona Bowl last.
Honestly, I think I would have the Arizona.
Oh, I forgot about that bowl game. Sorry, I was scrolling down Mexico too quickly.
Texas San Antonio.
Yeah, of course. Naturally,
I'm going to watch them all. You don't have to worry about me doing that because yeah. I'm a degenerate, and especially since Fresno State's at home this fall.
And I think these matchups, like you talked about, what last week or the week before, we thought the bowl games are garbage. There's only like if there's a game I'm like, yeah, I'm probably not going to tune in. I have a hard time saying which one. If I was forced to pick a game, like you cannot watch this game because you have to take the kids to do something, and I'm like, oh, I can't. My wife's working; I can't get out of it. It'd probably for me be the Arizona Bowl game has my least interest.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's fair, and I think you're probably feeling a little bit what a lot of Air Force fans have, you know, been telling.
Oh,
us
yeah,
on Twitter.
Oh yeah, I'll do that. But I'm like, if I have other stuff I have to do, like, or said, can't watch this, I'd be okay. Be like, okay, I'll do it that day. I'm fine.
Yeah. See, what's interesting to me too is on Twitter earlier on our Twitter account at MWC Connection, I asked a couple of questions of, you know, the fan bases, you know, that are going bowling, and of just as Mountain West fans as a whole. And the first question I asked was, if your team's bowling, how happy are you with the matchup? And what's really interesting to me is that between the three options, which is basically like happy, kind of meh, and kind of like this sucks, the votes between the three at this point are basically split between thirds. And I'm very interested, and feel free to contact us or to add your own vote if you haven't already. But I'm very interested in knowing whose fan bases are voting for which ones, or if there are splits across some of these categories, because I think that that's really interesting. And then the follow-up question I asked was about how, you know, Mountain West fans felt about the bowl schedule as a whole. And I feel like, generally speaking, the response so far has kind of reflected something of what we talked about last week. Because it's
do they mean like the time of day they're playing, or the teams, or like what, like this any specifications schedule from that? Because some people are like, well, like that Arizona bowl game's at 3:30 Mountain time on a Friday afternoon, or you have the late 8:15 kick on a Tuesday night, Boise Baylor.
Yeah, I didn't really specify. Okay. I just kind of assumed by, you know, the matchups, more or less, what that comes down. And I feel like that is kind of a reflection of what we talked about a little bit, about the fact that, you know, some segments,
but it's
of
hard,
the conference
want, it's not easy,
Craig Thompson to just do better. That, you know, that we can. Yeah, well, yeah, and I'm not saying it's not hard, but I feel
here's
like in the
my,
long
here's
run,
the,
that's something
like,
that Craig Thompson,
like I've said this before,
want to be aware of.
The Vegas Bowl, I think that should be where the champion goes, especially if there's a new stadium. Here's the thing, a couple things. Like I said before, when it was years ago, before the Mountain West came to what it would be now with Boise, Fresno, Nevada in the league, they went to the Liberty Bowl to play Conference USA champion. Right now, I think the Mountain West should either play the American champion, like Houston, not that they're a champion, but they're a good team, have a good record, 9-3. They need to either play the American champion, but honestly, the best they could do for playing a team, if you want to play a team from the Power 5, the best a champ could do is probably Pac-12 or Big 12 4. Maybe Big 12 3, but that's probably the best you're going to get. And even in years, like say there's a year like the playoff and the New Year's Six bowl games, say the champion, they get to a big money bowl game. Like, let's stick with the Pac-12 because they have the deal. Backup is the Rose Bowl no matter what. So let's just say Pac-12 is great this year. You're playing who's Pac-12 3? Who's Pac-12 4 this year? Do you have who that is? Let me check real quick. But what I'm saying is that could be a double-edged thing, because
I have
if
no
the champ
idea.
If the champion goes to the playoff and then the runner-up goes to the Rose Bowl, you're already down. So basically, Pac-12 champ is already gone. You're losing the number two team up to the Rose Bowl. There's a trickle-down effect. And you could end up playing, if you're playing Pac-12 4 for the champ, you could be playing Pac-12 6 some years. just because they're guaranteed to stick him in. So there's that too. That would be, because right now, 1, 2, 3, 4. Pac-12 5 is probably Washington State, I'm going to say, depending how you go. I'm going overall record, or Utah. That's the best, like, if that goes wrong, like this year it is in Washington, the playoff, and that's part of the reason why Cactus Bowl is losing a bid or the Vegas Bowl losing a bid. But the best a team will get from this conference, if you want to play a P5, is probably number 14 from Conference X.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like most of the quibble comes down to the fact that, you know, let's go back to Air Force for a minute. They're playing the 5th best team in the Sun Belt, if that, because they're not playing any of the big three that, you know, and they're definitely not playing Arkansas State or Appalachian State, who finished at the top.
Let me tell you this real quick. Hold on. South Alabama is 2-6 in league play. You
know, very briefly in the AP top 25. They're playing South Alabama. Yeah, so I mean, they pulled a couple surprises in non-conference play, but they were really underwhelming when it came to playing in the worst conference, all in all, top to bottom, in the FBS. And when you look at the other matchups,
that's a good matchup.
Top teams in the Sun Belt are getting, like, Appalachian State is going to the Camellia Bowl to play Toledo. You know, the Cure Bowl is UCF and Arkansas State. And I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to see who Troy was playing real quick.
Whatever.
They are at home versus Ohio, or they're at the Dollar General Bowl versus Ohio. And I feel like if it's going to get better by small degrees, what you want to try to do, I think, is try to find those matchups where you're playing more of the top teams in the MAC or in the Sun Belt, rather than the teams who are really middling in those conferences, because I think that's where fan bases start to feel like some of these matchups are somewhat beneath them. Like, if you remember, for example, I think it was the New Mexico Bowl 2 or 3 years ago, where it was Utah State and UTEP. And, you know, UTEP was fine, but Utah State probably deserved a little bit better. And I feel like, you know, if there is work to be done, it may not necessarily be with trying to secure another Power 5 game or not, because that might be a little bit harder to do. I think it comes down to kind of raising the floor of what's acceptable, securing, you know, Mountain West 3 versus Sun Belt 3, or, you know, Mountain West 2 versus MAC 4 or something like that, because I don't feel like that's as insulting as
I also think been, like, 3 years ago. All their bowls. It's kind of hit me now. They're all in the western, west of the Rockies, essentially. Arizona Bowl game is a very new bowl game. TV contract is, or TV broadcasting is not very good with the Campus Insiders deal. So there's that as well. New bowl, you're not going to get a good team. However, they can, I think it rotates with CUSA, so that might get a little bit better every other year. But I still, I agree, they need to play more teams, but they need to play bowl games. I get fan travel. You want, that's the main reason for bowl games, to get people in the seats to watch the game. But move east a little bit. If you're going to play an American team or play a MAC team, you got to move to the middle of the country a little bit to get different bowl lineups. Oh, jeez. The barbecue bowl?
There's going to be a new bowl in Kansas City any year.
Sure.
Or even, or even something like, you know, Mountain West 4.
Maybe, I'd love to play American Tulsa. Tulsa's a great team to watch.
What would that have been this year? It would have been like Air Force and...
Actually, technically, Tulsa? That's actually... Houston's technically lower than that. But yeah, you have... Instead, here's, you know, how the Tulsa American went. Yeah, South Florida, Temple, 10-win teams. Navy, Tulsa, Houston, 9-win teams. So if you play 4th AAC, that's either Houston or Tulsa.
Yeah.
Even Memphis 8-4 would be fun to watch. They beat Houston and have a fun offense.
And I would watch either of those games. And I feel like, so I feel like that is where the work needs to be done in the long run. Obviously, this isn't something that's going to change overnight. But, you know, I think for the good of the
conference, I think at the top, if there is a new Vegas stadium that does come to happen, that's going to help get, I think, a better matchup as well. I think. And maybe that'll be Pac-12 4 or Big 12 3 or 4. So yeah. That's just, I think that helps too. It'll get a better payout. It already has a good TV slot. It's like the first bowl game. It's on ABC. Has been the past couple of years. So, but you're right. Get, sorry, Sunbelt, but we don't want to play Sunbelt 6. When they've lost 2 of 8 games. You know what I mean? 2 of the last 8 games they've won. Lost 6 of 8, essentially.
That's true.
Anything else we need to add? So we discussed our upcoming schedule at all. Do we need, we might need to do that a little bit here. Should we do that on air with the folks?
Yeah.
I know that should be correct. So the first bowl game, December 17th. So
previewing games,
we may do a show next week. So it may kind of take kind of a week off. So I think it may be Tuesday of next week we'll have our preview for a couple bowl games. We'll figure it out, but we'll probably we'll have a basketball show because me and Eli's schedule finally figured it out. So if you want to hear me talk about nonsense, we'll have that Thursday. But look for a football show next week, and we'll figure it out. There'll probably be like a preview, 2 games here, 2 games there, going until the end because they kind of run it. They have like 2 sets because we have the 17th and then not till the 21st. So we'll figure it out. But probably next week we'll have another show. We'll keep update or keep following our Twitter, MWC Connection, so you know kind of what we're doing there. But yeah, we'll kind of have a couple of bowl previews, probably part 1, 2, maybe 3. But the regular season is over. Matt, rate your Fresno State season to 0 to 10. I'm sorry. Yes, you may. You may.
Oh.
That's fair.
Am I allowed to go into negative
minus
integers?
6. That's what it is for Fresno State. Let's hope for next year has better things.
We
but
call it like a minus
bowl season's
6.
Here. Congrats to the Aztecs. And if we felt we slighted you on the, our Clip It account, but you want to know what my fix to, is to that? Have an amazing play. Then I'll pull the highlight for you guys. Is that fair enough? Is that fair? I'm just saying a 43-yard touchdown pass in the corner of the – 33-yard touchdown pass,
ooh,
corner of the end zone.
Ooh,
that's a good play.
Shots.
I missed. Sorry, I missed the interceptions, but Donald Pumphrey didn't have a 55-yard touchdown run or something. What's a good play? Winning? Yeah, but no points. Come on.
I did
highlight the forced fumble when Josh Allen tried to bulldoze his way through.
Yeah, whatever.
Come on. It's just funny seeing comments on there, so.
That's true.
Always. And our show, SoundCloud, Block Talk Radio, Stitcher, iTunes. Leave us a review to have other people listen to this. Let us know if you like the show. Tell us if you hate the show. If you're listening and hate it and make it this far, what are you doing, man? Honestly, if you don't like it, what are you doing this far into the show? Yeah.
And tell your friends when
perfect.
They're traveling.
Perfect, that's it. Yes, that's our show
perhaps
for tonight.
Perhaps
again, Jeremy Moss, Matt Kennerly. Like Matt said, we are biased against your team. We'll be back next week for some bowl previews.